with the emphasis on Passover. Men everywhere have holidays, and the first definition of a holiday is a holy day, a day set aside in honor of someone or some event, usually not needing to work, so the dictionary says. And there are literally thousands of holidays around the world. They vary in importance, but every country has holidays. And usually our holidays look back. You think about the things that we have holidays here in the U.S. about, and it's looking back to a person or to an event to remember and celebrate. I don't know of any secular holiday that looks forward to anything. We don't get a day off to look forward to something, do we? But God instituted seven holidays, and they are feasts of the Lord. And I think that, when you stop and think, we take off for, what, President's Day, Memorial Day, July the 4th, Labor Day, and on and on. And then start to think, which holidays would be the most important, man's or God's? There's really nothing to compare, is it? You can turn to Leviticus 23 to find, I'm not going to read much scripture, but they're all seven are listed. There's seven holidays, but I did notice that at the beginning, before the seven are listed, do you remember what he mentioned? Before he listed the seven feasts, he mentioned the weekly Sabbath, which was like a holiday, a holy day. Concerning the feasts of the Lord, which ye shall proclaim to be holy convocations, even these are my feasts. 6 days shall the work be done, but the seventh is the Sabbath of rest and holy convocation. Ye shall do no work therein. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. So this Sabbath, or this weekly holy day, was established at creation, not at the law of Moses. This was a principle from the beginning, like the other principles of creation. That's when this one was instituted. And I just noticed that before we move on. This day is not without significance, but yet it is different from the seven feasts. It seems like God was wanting to give instruction about the feast, but first he wanted to remind them about the Sabbath of rest, or the principle of one day in seven, and then goes on with the feasts in verse 4 in chapter 23. The Hebrew feasts means appointed times. And I hope I can impress you a little bit anyway with the fact that the sequence and the timing of each of these feasts have been carefully orchestrated by God. Each is part of a comprehensive whole. In other words, God didn't just say, well, I'm going to put a feast over here, and well, we're going to do Passover, and we're going to do another one, and we're going to do another one. They are part of a comprehensive whole that collectively they tell a story. If you take all the feasts and put them together, they tell a story. And yet you can study one and they have their own individual aspects. They all tell a story. These are God's holidays, their feasts, holy days, their feasts of the Lord, their appointed times, their days of solemnity and sacredness. And I want to emphasize this, that they each is part of a comprehensive whole, but collectively they tell a story. Can you remember that? God is a covenant-keeping God. He's not haphazard. He's not disjointed and dysfunctional like I am, disorganized like I am. I am so glad of that. I think when I get to heaven, I'm going to get some organization in my life. Until then, I just work on it and struggle, and I lean a lot on to ask the ministry. how much I need them to remind me of things. But God isn't that way. He's not haphazard and disjointed. It's hard for us to grasp time from God's perspective, isn't it? A day is with the Lord as a thousand years to us, and we're like, woohoo! And a thousand years is like a day to us. What did you do yesterday? Anybody remember a picnic yesterday and we had a storm? Well, yeah, but to God, that could have been a thousand years ago. No difference. And our plan, purpose, and goals from 6 days ago are probably pretty fresh on our minds. In your business, I doubt, and I just use Edifice because I saw Dallas sitting there, and they didn't make some just gigantic changes. They were going this way, and they said, no, let's go that way. No, 6 days ago, our goals, we know about where we were in all your businesses and in the goals for our family, our community, and our church and business. Is it too difficult to think that God had a comprehensive plan 6,000 years ago and he hasn't changed? I used to have this idea that God, you know, had the creation and, you know, what happened to man? We were bad, sin turned away, and then Moses, and he gave the law. And again, they did so bad, and the kings and judges and all this, and finally about we get to the end of Malachi, and God said, look, we got to do something different. That wasn't the way it is. God had a plan, and this plan goes all the way through. And he's still working his plan today. He didn't have to get up 4,000 years into the journey and say, I'm putting on the blinker. I'm going somewhere else. He had a comprehensive plan that is still his plan today. God did not give his people a holy day, a feast that was an end in itself, but was full of purpose and insight into his program, each one, and woven into the here and now was an open window into the future plan. Now, all right, I need your help a little bit. What was the first feast? We talked about the Sabbath. What was number one?
Passover.
Do we have any more of these? This one doesn't seem to be working out too good. There's none in here. Well, if we can't find one, we'll do without one. I was hoping to write them all up there. Did somebody say Passover? I think I heard it. The first feast, Passover. Is that a highlighter? Or is it a...
I have a highlighter.
He has a... Could I try it?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Okay, I think you can. All right, what was the second one? The second feast. Boy, if you can turn to Leviticus 23, I'll let you. You ever do that in school on a test? You can use your book? You allow that?
No.
Feast of Unleavened Bread. And do you know when it started? Unleavened Bread. All right, and it started, yes. Okay, what day did the Passover start?
14th day of the first month.
Okay, does anybody know what the name of the first month is? It's Nisan. Oops, misspelled there, Nisan. And it was on the 14th day. The unleavened bread started the day following, which was on the 15th day. Okay, what's the third one? I'm going to run out of board the way this is going. What's the third one? Come on, students. Okay, I'll tell you. First fruits, the Feast of First Fruits.
Try this one. We can't see anything back there.
Okay.
Oh, like a top. Now you can see that. Feast of First Fruit. Now, maybe I'll just... Okay, let's do the next one yet. The next feast. Anybody?
Pentecost.
Thank you. I should have worked harder in my penmanship class. All right, do you remember what time of year these were observed in? First month of the Jewish calendar coincides with, basically with our April. So it's in the spring. Always, you remember Passover, it's always in the spring of the year. On the 14th day, we know who fulfilled, what happened at Passover. It's where salvation, where Jesus became the Passover lamb. His blood shed cleanses us from sin. He said, I wanted to eat this Passover with you, he told the disciples, before I became the Passover lamb. The very next day, they had been commemorating this Feast of Unleavened Bread. You know what leaven is a type of? Sin, iniquity, and how it spreads. Well, there was no leaven the next day, which indicated that there would be no decomposition in his body. There was no, his body did not decay. Psalm, I forget the 16, I think, talks about that. His body did not decay. He became the Passover lamb when he shed his blood. The next day he was in the tomb. There was no, I don't know if you've ever seen a person right when they died, and within minutes or almost immediately, you can see it. It changes, their body changes, and so very rapidly, the body goes. But with Jesus on that second day, his body didn't do that. He laid in the grave, but his body didn't, wasn't, I can't get the word I want, but you know what I mean. He didn't decompose in any way. The Feast of First Fruit. You know what
give this back hands to him, please.
Thank you. Their Passover was always in the time of the barley harvest. And they would bring the first fruits of the barley and bring it to the priest. Like if it was now in Dublin, we could bring the first fruit of the wheat crop because it's just at that stage. But they did, theirs was barley, and it was earlier than what our wheat is. And the priest would wave it to the Lord and offer it. What does 1 Corinthians 15, who is the first fruit?
Jesus.
The risen Christ. When he rose, on which day? On the third day. Do we need to twist any text to get the types out of this and to see what you remember each one? You can study them out of their own, but they all show a big picture. They have a story to tell. Jesus was the first fruit. Remember, he told Mary, he said, don't touch me yet, I haven't ascended back to the Father. He was the first fruit, went to God. The first fruit, back to the Father, to the presence of God, the first one. And very interesting,
and why do we, there's a couple things I could ask why right now maybe. Why do we commemorate the death of Jesus in connection with Easter? Why do we say he was crucified on Friday, on Good Friday? Why do we do that? Could I ask you how you get how you get 3 days and three nights from Friday to Friday evening when he was crucified till Sunday morning? How you get 3 days into that? You don't. You can hammer the pulpit, twist it any way you want. And I know people have said, well, Friday, you know, Saturday, and then Sunday, that's 3 days. Well, you tell me where the three nights come from then. Over and over, Jesus said 3 days and three nights. And to me, the clincher of it is the disciples that were on the road to Emmaus. Do you remember? This was the first day of the week Jesus had risen. He had been seen by the women. He had appeared. And these Cleopas and the other disciple were going home, and Jesus met up with them. And he pretended, I enjoy reading this one, like he didn't know what was going on. And they said, are you the only stranger in Jerusalem? Haven't you heard what happened? We thought he was going to be the Messiah. We thought he was going to be the one that delivered us from Roman rule. And they killed him. And today is the third day. Their days always started at sunset, and they ended at sunset. It was 3 days. If you ever lost a loved one, you knew how to count when it was the third day back, counting back to when your loved one passed. Why do we commemorate this around the time of the goddess Ishtar, the commemoration? The goddess of fertility. Why do we do that? Well, I think there were not only scams. There are not only scams in our day. There were scams many, many years ago. Constantine in the Council of Nicaea was the one that is responsible for this change. The Encyclopedia Britannica said that the final settlement of the dispute over Easter Passover was one among the other reasons which led Constantine to summon the Council of Nicaea in 325. And this council was unanimous that Easter was to be kept on Sunday and on the same Sunday throughout the world, and that none should hereafter follow the blindness of the Jews. Wow. And you have to understand that at this time, the Jewish people were the scum of the earth. They had crucified the Messiah. Christianity had taken over as the state religion. Everybody had to be. There was a time that it was against the law for the Jewish people to even be in Jerusalem. They're the ones that crucified the Messiah. So therefore, they don't have the blessings of God anymore. And the church took it upon themselves. And it's called the replacement theology. And so we're not going to follow those Jewish people anymore. So, and it was changed. And to me, that's the answer of these things, that these little things. And a lot of that's for your interest. I wish somehow we could go back and just follow Passover. We know when Passover is, and go by then. I don't know how much of a big deal to make out of it, but I do want you to know, from more of a scriptural position, at least what I think is correct. All right, we've been to the third feast, first fruit. The day after this, after the feast of first fruit, they were supposed to. I miss you first. The day after this feast, they were to count 50 days, and then it was Pentecost. And we know what happened. This was another day of celebration and no work, and it was called the Feast of Weeks or Shavuot. And of course, we know what happened when the Spirit was poured out and the birth of the church. Now, we said those are all in the spring. Are you with me on that? This happened all in the spring. In fact, it will be real soon. I didn't figure over it, but it's going to be in the next week or 2 weeks, I believe, will be the Feast of Pentecost. Now, the next one is the Feast of, anybody know? Now we're moving out of the spring feast and going into the fall feast. The next one is the Feast of Trumpets. The Feast of Trumpets was to be on the seventh month, and it's what is called Rosh Hashanah today. It was the first of the fall feast. It begins on the first day of the seventh month. Now, you need to understand that the Jewish calendar, the lunar calendar, that they went by, it went by the cycle of the moon. And every new moon started a new month. And they would watch for the new moon. We don't watch much for it, do we? Anybody know when new moon was? 2 days ago, 19. 2 days ago, it was the 19th. And so today would be called the second day of the new month. Because new moon, and I don't have time to go and explain all that, but the moon is not visible in the whole world for about, and I don't have it figured up exactly the hours, but it's close to 2 days. Until finally the sun sets in the western sky and you see that little thumbnail of a moon. And that's the first it's been seen for almost 2 days. It was seen the last time in the east just before sunup. And then it's hidden around the world. Well, when it's seen again, that's new moon. And the priests were to be watching for that. They'd be on the wall. And when they would spot it, they would blow the trumpet. And I've done that before. I blow the trumpet like I'm driving a truck. But no, however they do a trumpet. And they had to watch for it. And then the trumpet. And so then the Feast of Trumpets was to be on the first day of the seventh month. It typifies watching and typifies an ingathering. 1 Thessalonians 4 talks about the trumpet sound and the dead shall rise. You see the type into this one. Are we watching? Are you ready? Do you think about it in the daytime? I need to keep watching, listening for the sound of the trumpet. The people listen, the priests watch, and we're all priests. The next one is the Feast of Atonement. Oh, I should. This is the Feast of Trumpets. Number 6 is the Feast of Atonement. And the 7th is the Feast
Tabernacles.
So these are already fulfilled. These are, I believe, are coming. And I would say if you disagree with me, that's quite all right. And we'll still be friends when we get to heaven. If I'm wrong, you just come pat me on the back and say, Brother Sim, you didn't know what you were talking about. But I believe this is right. And if you find anything in Scripture to show me I'm wrong, I do want to know it. But number 6, the Feast of Atonement, the 10th day of the 7th month. It's only 5 days after the Feast of Trumpets. It's the only holy day with fasting. These are days of awe and soberness. A lot of the feasts were more like happy times in remembering, but this one was fasting. Days of awe and soberness. It typifies the day, I believe, that when the people that rejected the Messiah are made at one with him again. They will go through hard times, but will look on the one they pierced and mourn. It points to a future. Now, notice this word here. That word is at, the next word is one, and the next one is meant. At one meant. And jot it down, look to it, turn to it if you want to, in Zechariah 12, verse 10. And that's my conclusion on that one. It's the day they will look on him. I think I would be better to turn to it rather than butcher it up. Zechariah 12, verse 10. And I will pour upon the house of David and on the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and supplications. And they shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. And that day shall be a great mourning in Jerusalem as the mourning of Hadad-Rimmon in the valley of Megiddon. I think that's when they will realize they killed the Messiah. And the last one is the Feast of Ingathering. And this is on the 15th day of the 7th month. Remember, the first day is the Feast of Trumpets, the 10th day is the Feast of Atonement, and the 15th day is the Feast of Ingathering. And this one was with much joy. Oh, they were, you know, you go out and make booths and everything. It was just a big happy time. Well, is that hard to see that this typifies the ingathering when God dwells among us? And wherever that is, that's heaven. Where God is with man, that's heaven. All right. Now, we didn't say a lot about the Passover feast, and that's the one I want to emphasize before we partake of communion. Couldn't we rightfully conclude that the Feast of Passover is foundational for all the rest of them? If we didn't have the Feast of Passover, there wouldn't be any others. And if we didn't, it's like there's one foundation, no other foundation can anybody lay than that is laid, which is Jesus. If we didn't have the foundation of the blood of Christ as the atonement for our sins, you could forget everything else. Passover is the oldest continuously observed holiday in the world. And I want to tell you one other thing to remember. There was only one Passover. Remember? Remember what happened to the children of Israel in Egypt, in bondage? Hard times. Moses, you know the story of Moses. 40 years in Egypt, raised in the king's palace. 40 years on the backside of the desert. And then 40 years in service to God. And he came back. God told him to go back and lead my people out. And plague after plague, and finally it came down to it. That God said, I'm going to do one more plague, and after that, Moses will let you go. And he said, the firstborn, and I think by history and everything else that it was the firstborn male would die. Unless one thing happened. And by this time, these people had seen these plagues that God did. It was the hand of God. It was so stark. It was right in front of them. They knew that God was working. I believe they believed him. And he said, if you kill a lamb, put the blood on the doorposts and on the lintel, then I will pass over you. I wonder how many in here that are living in your home yet, you young boys, are the firstborn in your family. I know Edwin is. How many more? Stand to your feet. Edwin, stand. Anybody else? Okay, but you have your own house. That's okay, though. I'm not sure how all that works, but I kind of believe that it was everybody's household. We had Alex. I saw him stand. And anybody else? Kenton. Okay, I'm sure there's several others that were scared to stand. But you know what would have happened if you would have been living in Egypt with the Israelites? What would have happened if your dad would say, I'm not going to put any blood on my door? You know what would have happened? You'd have been killed. But your dad would have said, I'm going to do what God says. I believe him. And he would have got that lamb and killed it and collected that blood. And he would have, I don't believe he'd have put just a little touch on it. I don't want to get it really red. I think he would have had it so you could see it from afar off. Applied the blood so that you could live. That's what happened on that Passover. And so when they went out, God gave directions to Moses of keeping the Passover, to remember. So when your children grow up, they remember what happened. And to this day, the Passover is still kept by the Jewish people. It is a huge, huge holiday, probably the biggest one for them. Every man needed a lamb without blemish, a male, got it out of the herd, was killed on the 14th day. And another thing I noticed, that everybody had to be in the house. Now you can take it and you can put any kind of conclusions on that you want, but I don't believe Edward, Kenton, Alex, any of them would say, "Dad, can I go out tonight? I want to go see the stars." The dads would have said, "No, you're staying in the house." Everybody had to be in the house. At that time, for many, many years after that, there were only three things that were required on the Passover table, and that was the lamb, it was unleavened bread, and bitter herbs. Those were the three things. The lamb typified the blood. The unleavened bread, do away with sin. And the bitter herbs were to remind them. They say even to this day, when the Jewish people celebrate the Seder meal, they call it, they eat herbs, that horseradish, and they eat it until the tears just run. It's just so bitter. And to remember, we were slaves back there, but we've been delivered. By the time of Christ, a traditional practice of the Passover ceremony had been established, and some things continue and some have changed dramatically. But by the time of Christ, they, as I understand, they still had the three things on the table. But since then, there are so many things different. They have four cups of wine, for example. I'll share this today. They have four cups of wine. They've incorporated four cups into the celebration. And it's based on Exodus 6. And it said, the first cup is, I will bring you out. The second cup, I will free you. Remember all the plagues? I will free you. And the third one is, I will redeem you. And the fourth one is, I will take you, which is a cup of praise and acceptance. Remember that fourth cup. Do you remember? And when they do that, when they take the first cup, they give thanks. And this is what they usually say. Blessed art thou, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, who createst the fruit of the vine. Blessed art thou, O Lord, our God, who has chosen us for thy service from among the nations. Blessed art thou, O Lord, our God, King of the universe, who has kept us in life, who has preserved us, and has enabled us to reach this season. And it was the Messiah, it was Jesus in the upper room that took that cup and gave thanks. I'm going to try to tell you real quickly what they do after the first cup in the Jewish Seder today. Are you with me? In the meal today that the Jewish observing Jews keep. After that first cup, they have a special wrapped piece of bread. It's called the afikoman. And it's three pieces of bread. The center one is wrapped in a special way. After the first cup, they take the centerpiece out and they go hide it somewhere in the house. Are you following? Three pieces of bread, the middle one taken out, they hide it away. These are Jewish people today. And then, children, you're listening? After they hide that piece of bread away, they send the children to go find it. How many of us like to play hide and seek? go hide something and then go find it. Well, the children, this is big stuff to the children. They run all through the house, behind the couch, just everywhere, in this little room, everywhere. And when they find this piece that's called the afikoman, they're just ecstatic. Holland, I found it! And they bring it back. And then you know what happens? The head of the home takes that piece of bread and he breaks it. And everybody in the house eats that piece of bread. Ask the Jewish rabbis today why they do it, and they don't know. They don't know. here's what I think. After the time of Christ, you remember how the Jewish people were scattered? And they were still going to the synagogue. They were still keeping Passover. And they wanted to incorporate things in that spoke of Christ. And you know how things go, and over a couple of generations, things become culture that so different than what happened 100 years ago. We could talk about things like that today. And I believe some of these things became part of culture that the Jewish people today are hard-pressed to know, how did this get into the meal today? And I'll tell you one more thing yet about the word aphikomen, the name of that piece of bread. It's the only Greek word, which is the New Testament language, the only Greek word in the Seder meal. All the rest of them are Hebrew. And it literally means, I came. I came. It almost makes me cry. For 2,000 years, they've been looking for the one that came already. And they're blinded. Well, after all that, they... I should have mentioned, they ask four questions also to the children. The children ask four questions. And just very briefly, they ask their parents, and they say, on all nights we may eat either unleavened or leavened bread, but on this night only unleavened bread. Why is this night different from all other nights? They ask another question. On all other nights we eat all kinds of herbs, but on this night we eat bitter herbs. Why is this night different? The third one, on all other nights, we do not dip our vegetables even one time, but on this night, we dip them twice in salt water and carousel. Why is this night different? And then they ask a question, on all other nights, we eat either sitting or reclining, but on this night, we eat only reclining. Why is this night different? And the answer is in Exodus 13, 14 through 16. I think I'm going to turn to that. And remember, this is in the Seder meal today. Exodus 13. And it shall be, when thy son asketh thee in time to come, saying, what is this that thou shalt say unto them? By strength of hand the Lord brought us out from Egypt, from the house of bondage. It came to pass, when Pharaoh would hardly let us go, that the Lord slew all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and of beast. Therefore I sacrifice to the Lord. And that's why this night is different. That's the answer to those questions. Immediately after that, they have the third cup of wine. It's poured and sipped, which is the cup of redemption. And interesting, right after this cup, they'll send a child to the door to look up and down the street to see if Elijah may be coming, the forerunner of Christ. They're still looking for the forerunner. They actually have an extra plate set at the table just in case. Just in case the forerunner of the Messiah comes. And then is the fourth cup. The cup of acceptance or praise is poured and taken. And this is the one that Jesus said, I won't drink it now until I drink it anew in the kingdom. It was after the fourth cup they had a closing hymn. By tradition, every Seder ends with the last half of the Hallel, which is Hallelujah, Praise, and it's Psalm 113 through 118. And they probably sang, it's customary to this day to sing verse 22 in Psalm 118. The stone which the builders refused is become the headstone of the corner. This is the Lord's doing, and it is marvelous in our eyes. This is the day which the Lord hath made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. They still sing those verses today. Well, so the question to us this morning, has the blood been applied? Are we in the house? Have we inspected our lamb? Do you love your Redeemer? Or is this just a ritual to endure? Such a different, such a difference on where our heart is. Do we look forward? Are we looking? We look, this, Jesus said this too. One thing I want to mention is Jesus in Luke, Jesus partook of the Passover with his disciples. And then after that is when he instituted the Lord's Supper. And he said, that's when he gave them the bread and he said, this is my body. They had just had the shank bone of the lamb. They've had the bitter herbs and the cup. And when he instituted the Lord's Supper, the communion table, he said, gave them the bread and he said, now this is my body. I think the disciples were really confused. They didn't understand that. This is my body which is broken for you. And he said, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, not the blood of that lamb, in my blood. And as long as you do this, remember what Paul said, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes. And this is what we're here for, proclaiming the Lord's death. Are we grateful? That's all I can ask. Are we grateful for what he's done for us, that he died, that he was the first fruit? He went back to the Father, and now we can come after him. You know, as we think of all the suffering that Jesus went through on the cross, it brings tears to our eyes and sorrow that they would treat our Savior like that. But alas, he's risen. He's gone to heaven, and we can come after him. But right now, we're remembering his suffering and his death. And are you thankful? Are you just deeply grateful for bringing us, making us sons and daughters? I think we'll proceed with the ordinances at this time.